We are speaking today with Ken Katinger, professor of human-computer interaction at Carnegie Mellon University and co-director of the Pittsburgh Science of Learning Center. The Science of Learning Center, which is operated jointly by Carnegie Mellon and the University of Pittsburgh, was established 5 years ago with a $25 million grant from the National Science Foundation. This spring, the NSF renewed the funding for another 5 years, bringing the agency's total commitment to $50 million. Now, that's a significant amount of money to study learning. Professor Katinger, what is the Pittsburgh Science of Learning Center doing that has merited this level of support by the NSF?
Well, we're doing a lot of things, and I guess you have to at $5 million a year. We're involving researchers from computer science and psychology as a fundamental research base with researchers in a number of content domains like physics and chemistry and language learning to really understand what conditions lead to the most effective learning for students. And, you know, when I mean by most effective, it's not just getting that test at the end of the chapter done, but long-term retention, being able to apply your knowledge in new situations, maybe accelerate your future learning. So, and that's what we call robust learning. We really want to understand the conditions that facilitate robust learning.
Teaching is a skill that must be as old as humankind, and certainly classroom teaching is something that has been going on for hundreds of years. What more do we need to learn about learning?
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. You know, transportation has been going on forever too, right? How long ago did we start walking? But then we started to, you know, use horse-drawn carriages and cars and airplanes, and technology has really made transportation a whole different thing. Education's been slower to have that kind of impact of technology. We're at a point, I think, in history where we can really think hard about what would be a scientific and technological basis for making learning better, faster, and more productive, more enjoyable for kids and for college students.
Is part of the problem depending on where you can do the research, where you can gather research, classroom versus laboratory?
Oh, yeah. I think certainly we've been studying learning for a long time, and a lot of that research is in the laboratory. But we have also been doing some studies, you know, observing what's going on in schools, but not the same kind of rigor as in the laboratory. And so part of the Pittsburgh Science of Learning Center, particularly from the psychological research side, is to bring those two ideas together, to do rigorous research, but do it in the field, do it with students in real classrooms as they're learning.
To do that, I understand that you make a lot of use of computers and particularly computerized tutors. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think that's part of the opportunity now, and you know, at this point in history, is because we have the technologies these days that can record lots of interactions as they happen, and even be involved in educational interactions. It's not just that we can improve instruction because computers might help in that process. It's because we can also collect lots more data at a much finer grained level. You know, not just did a student get an answer right or wrong, how long did it take them? If they needed help, how much help did they need? When they got help, how long did it take for them to study it, or did they just move on? What's really amazing is how much we can detect from that data about not just students' math learning, but also what things like affect and motivation. It's detectable in that kind of data. So technology plays a huge role in allowing us to understand live learning in a detailed way.
And again, you say this is going on in real live classrooms. Where is this taking place?
Yeah, the focus has been on math courses, science courses, and second language learning courses at the middle school, high school, and college level. And we work with schools basically across the country at those levels to study learning in those different domains.
Mm-hmm. And again, the computer serves as a way of gathering information. Obviously, the computer allows you to store information, but that's not to say that the future of learning or the future of teaching is necessarily computer-based. Right?
That's right. Computers are just a component in all of these courses. In our high school math courses, students spend at most 40% of their time doing mathematics practice activities and instructional activities on the computer. The other 60% of the time is in face-to-face instruction with the fellow students and the teacher. But what the computer can do is, during that time, we can experiment with different approaches to teaching in the computer and tightly control how it happens. We can simulate the kinds of things we might want to try with teachers, too, different teaching practices. And when we ask teachers to do those, they may or may not do exactly what we say. And when we program the computer to do it, it does exactly what we say. So we know what we're getting in that regard. And then we can ramp up that kind of knowledge to influence other kinds of instructional practices and textbooks and so forth.
You emphasized that the goal is robust learning,
yes.
Long-term retention. Obviously, it takes a while to gather that sort of information and prove that the learning truly was robust. That said, though, are there certain things that have come out of the research thus far? Are there things you've learned about learning that we can pass on now?
Yeah, well, we're learning a lot about both how to learn math and science and language in the details of those domains, but also more generally about differences in students' learning skills. Just to give an example of that, we did some studies where we were looking at if students are smart about when to ask help from the computer-based system. And what we found is that there's a lot of variability there. Some students are just fine, but other students are asking for help too often when they don't need it. Other students were asking for help hardly ever, even though they do need it. And that would correlate with how much they were learning. Those students who had good help-seeking skills, we saw, were learning more, and those who didn't were learning less. So there we used the data to have an insight already about learning skills. The next step was to say, well, what can we do about it? Can we change that? So we built a computer-based tutor. Here, and part of the story, I mentioned computer scientists before, but I haven't said much about their role, is to take notions from artificial intelligence and machine learning to build systems that can smartly adapt, okay? So here we watch students as they're working and detect whether they're engaging in good or poor help-seeking, and then the computer jumps in at appropriate moments and may give a student a little reminder, hey, it's okay to ask for help sometimes. That was a good time there that you might have done, so why don't you and see how it helps you learn. So we've tried that system out in schools and in one of these studies, and what was particularly striking about that and important, and this goes to robust learning, is that we could track students months after they've gotten this computer help-seeking tutor. So it's no longer present, but are they behaving the way we had hoped months later? And indeed, that's what we found when we did analyzed the data. So if we could have effects like this where we not only improve and accelerate learning of content, but improve students' learning skills, that's a real multiplier. That means they can learn lots of other things faster. And in today's world, that's critical. They're going to go out. They're not going to know already what to do. They're going to need to learn. They're going to need to be good help seekers. So We need to make an impact at that level.
Okay. So you're gathering all of this information at 50, 60 schools around the world. What ultimately happens to all this data?
As in a number of other areas of science, now we're accumulating this database and making it available to other researchers. So part of the Pittsburgh Science of Learning Center is to have a data repository. We call it the Data Shop. You can go to our website and if you want to understand more about how students learn math or science or language learning, you can engage in secondary analyses of these data sets. We're anticipating in the next 5 years, we're going to increase the volume of data by 100-fold. We already have something like 100,000 student hours of data available. So it's truly a vast amount of data. And that data comes at about, we get a data point every 10, 20, 30 seconds. So it's a lot of detailed data about how learning changes over time. It's a gold mine to better understand how learning works.
Astronomers, physicists have known to generate lots of data. Has there ever been anything quite like this for education researchers?
No, I think, you know, there's things going on. You know, school districts are starting to use the collect their own databases and use those. It's starting to happen. But, you know, what makes this possible is that when you have these courses that have, say, a 40% technology component, it makes it, you know, that's how we can do this. We would love to have other data, and in some of our projects we do audio tape and videotape students and teachers and so forth. But yeah, it really hasn't happened at this level before, because this group of people coming together from computer science and psychology and education, you know, hasn't happened before, and that $25 million, now $50 million from NSF has really made it possible.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you for speaking to us today.
Happy to.
For the School of Computer Science at Carnegie Mellon University, this is Byron Spice.